Hey everyone, this is John Hilgenberg with JCH Cabinets, and you're listening to the Builder Sessions podcast.
Welcome to the Builder Sessions, a podcast where we chat with your favorite builders.
We get to know them, their stories, and hopefully inspire you to get off the couch and build something cool. I'm Hoff.
And I'm Rosie.
And on this episode, we talk with John Hilgenberg from JCH Cabinets. We chat about surrounding yourself with people who are more skilled than you to encourage growth, the importance of being humble, hungry, and smart, and we learn all about John's on-site craftsman training program.
Please enjoy our interview with John.
John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Pretty excited for this one. I've been following you for quite a while, and you've got so many videos, and the content you release is just amazing. As a cabinet installer and a tradesperson myself, I appreciate when people are willing to share. So excited to pick your brain here and have a good chat with you.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. It's a trip. It's been really fun sharing what I do know and not realizing what I knew, or what I took for granted was I thought everybody kind of knew what I knew living in this little bubble here prior to Instagram. And then only to find out that, yeah, what I am sharing is actually making an impact. We just kind of talked about before we started recording. It's like, yeah, it's fun and it's educational and it's helping a lot of people. And I really enjoy that aspect of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So for our listeners who don't know who you are or what you're about, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh boy. Well, I'm John Hilgenberg, owner of JCH Cabinets and Installations. I specialize in cabinetry installations. I guess you would say high-end residential cabinetry installations. I also do design work and provide cabinetry. But the main shift now, it's just the main focus going forward is going to be the craftsman training program, where I fly out and train companies on these best practices, cabinetry installation best practices, and educate people on how to be more efficient, how to be more profitable out in the field.
So how did you get started into this? Was it a younger age? Were you hands-on, shop class? How did this come to be?
God, no, I was the least handy person you'd ever come across.
Really? You know?
Yeah, it's really weird because my brother was always the more hands-on guy who could, you know, break a motor down, put it back together. And I used to just kind of look, and I am ashamed to say it, but maybe not look down on it, but I was bound for college, right? I was bound for greatness. I was going to be I was going to go to college and God knows what. I wanted to be a teacher, but not because I enjoyed teaching, because I thought I was 3 months off, I can make good money, and that's not how it works. That's not how any of this works as a teacher. So
yeah, preaching to the choir.
Right. And so incredibly not handy, and fortunately landed a job in a shop in Massachusetts, a small cabinet shop in Massachusetts. I had zero experience, never used power tools, couldn't read a tape measure, and it was trial by fire. They were not afraid to throw you on a, you know, 10-foot panel saw, Striebig, you know, wall mounted panel saw, and tell you to start cutting. And it was off to the races at that point. It was wild.
Sometimes that throwing into the fire can be really scary, but also beneficial, because it just, you know, kind of gets that fear over, like, hey, whether you're comfortable on this machine or not, you need to start doing it. And I think a lot of that learning comes from the repetition and just getting started with something.
Yeah. You don't have time to be afraid. I mean, you have a little bit of time, but it's like, all right, just get going and do it. And you were expected to do it. I'll never forget. And they're like, throw that sheet of plywood up there, set the saw to 48. It's a digital saw, right? And so I'm like, why 48? I'm like, Jesus, plywood's 48 by 96. I'm like, oh, what's that? You know, it's just that just shows you just the level where I was at. And I was 24 at the time, I think, to show you just, yeah. So I got a sort of a late start when it comes to the trades. So it was a very, again, very fast paced environment. and I got to learn all, but the best part about it is I got to learn all facets of it. I got to learn the fabrication, installation, or fabrication, finishing aspect, and installation. And so it was really well cross-trained in those aspects of cabinetry.
I think that's a good topic to discuss a bit too, because every shop is different, and the owners or shop foreman, depending how it's run, it seems like every shop's a little bit different. Some might just be, I went to school with people that had just were on a panel saw for 4 years, sliding panel saw. I had people that were just finishing. Yeah. I was fortunate enough to work at a shop where it was cutting out on the panel saw, machining, assembly, finishing, installation, countertops, kind of that whole, like you're saying, that cross.
Same thing, right.
And yeah, you might not be when you go to school, you might not be, say, the best or a master at this, but you have well-rounded skill sets that you can kind of weave into the other aspects of it. So I think that's a nice aspect to be able to get into a shop where you can do different aspects of that and bring everything together. So when you're installing, you can go back and say, oh, so that's why we assemble it this way, so that for installation, like it just kind of brings the whole job together, I find.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot more sense. And God forbid, I think people who follow me enough know the amount of times I've had to cut a cabinet down on site. I think that comes in very handy, understanding just the fabrication aspect of a cabinet, knowing how to break one down and put it back together comes in super handy. And I think the really cool thing about being in a shop like that, where you are cross-trained, is that you get to maybe focus and go towards something that you really enjoy, right? And I started to enjoy the installation aspect, and I think they saw that and really started pushing me towards that as well.
John, being a little more mature getting into it, like when you started off, because you said you kind of started off late or whatever getting into it. The only reason I say that, because I started, we both got our ed degrees. We were considered mature students by age. But were you motivated a little more by that? Were you a little older at the time than the peers that were coming through? Knowing that you had a little bit of time or life experience under your belt, were you able to use that as a motivator to kind of get it done faster, but do a good job? Was that a good motivator for you?
I don't think so. I think, I found that I really enjoyed the work. Mm. It was one of those things where I didn't realize it up to that point, that you could actually enjoy your job and get paid well to do this job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're laying awake at night thinking about how you're going to go about your day, how you're going to assemble these cabinets, you know, because I'm so green and I'm trying to plan my day, think about how I'm going to do things so I'm not failing the next day. I just realized how much I enjoyed it. I mean, and it it is fun. Yeah. And so I don't think the age so much thing came into it, except that after I started working there for a bit, you know, they started throwing money at me in a sense. Like it was a good paying job. It had benefits that white collar jobs had. It had medical, dental, 401k, profit sharing. It had all of these things that you don't realize that you can get in the trades. It felt very white collar in that aspect. And oh yeah, you can have fun and cut stuff all day and talk a lot of trash and be, you know, be blue, so to speak, and go about your day and dust off and go about your life as well. So yeah. So I don't think the age so much played as much of an aspect as the in just enjoying it, but also it being quite rewarding financially and mentally.
How many people can say they absolutely enjoy their job, right? I think I don't think you can put a price on, you know, you can work a job that you hate and get paid a lot, or you can get, you know, you could be paid minimal and enjoy your job. And there's if you're getting paid well and enjoying it, that's awesome. That's a good feeling when you can sit back and say instant gratification of a day on site and I've got, you know, a full kitchen done or say half a kitchen installed and I'm having fun. I'm getting paid good and look at what I'm doing. That's pretty cool to be able to look back at the end of the day and say, I love my job. I'm looking forward to going back every single day. I'm having fun. Music's cranking, being able to have, you know, chat with people if you're out working with a crew. And I mean, that I think that makes you live longer when you can enjoy your stuff and you're not just living every day for a dollar or hating your job.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of us maybe do take that for granted. We don't realize maybe how much fun we are having on site, or in the shop, as opposed to sitting behind a desk. I mean, we all have to sit behind a desk at some point or another. I mean, I do because, you know, every business owner eventually has to. You have to do the books, you have to start, you have to plan your day, you have to do a lot of work behind the scenes, but ultimately, it can be very enjoyable on site. You can have a good time enjoying your job for sure.
Yeah. So once you're with this company, did you stay with them for quite a while and then move on to your own, or did you bounce around from a couple different shops?
You know, it was never in my mind to be self-employed. I don't know why. It was always just I felt like I made a very good employee and I was making a good living up in Massachusetts. Eventually, I think it was about 4 years, maybe 3.5, 4 years, decided to move down to South Carolina to just, you know, get away from the winters of Massachusetts and maybe try a different area out in Charleston, South Carolina. It's very beautiful area and somewhat affordable at the time. And boy, did I take a financial haircut. I went from, and this is what 20 plus years ago, I was making about 18, 15 an hour with all those benefits, right? And to making 12, 15 an hour with like zero benefits. And it was very eye-opening. But I was fortunate to have worked at that job and being out in the field. I think that's the other thing, maybe that working in a shop versus working in the field. If you're out in the field, your network grows very quickly. You become much more known. This is before social media, right? This is, you know, 20 plus years ago. And so if you're working in a shop and you're learning, which is incredibly valuable, you have the only network you have are the people that you're working with in that shop. Whereas once you get out on site, people start to know you, they start to recognize maybe the skill set, and your network can grow and your ability to grow and maybe get better jobs will grow. And that's what happened to me. It just kind of, I started to get out on site and the, you know, potential jobs and or openings started to be presented themselves to me. So yeah. That they moved down to Massachusetts was, again, it was a decision, just a lifestyle decision, but man, it hurt financially, but I mean, ultimately, I think it worked out. It worked out.
There's so many people in the houses when if you're installing cabinetry, you know, you've got the framers, all the sub trades, and word of mouth can go quite far if you're doing more
right.
high quality work. Now, all of a sudden, like you said, instead of being in your little shop with, say, 8 or 10 people, you could be at four different job sites, and now you've got 10 people per job site. So there's 30 contacts who, you know, you start chatting, and yeah, it's a good way to network.
Yeah, project managers, and sometimes the jobs are so large it would be, you know, maybe a couple of cabinet shops within one project. And so yeah, you can just start chatting, and that's kind of what happened. And then I, you know, went from working in the shop in Charleston, working a little bit out in the field, to transition into, I guess you'd call it project management, where I was, I guess eventually my title was, you know, it's ridiculous. It was like manager of field operations. But I got to manage about eight high-end, I guess you say high-end installation crews. These were all sort of single entity installers. It's what Charleston seems to be, and what seems to be the same, what I found across the country is that a lot of the higher end installers tend to work alone. And so I was managing these crews and I got to work with them day to day and just kind of watch these absolute studs, you know, problem solve with them, and got to learn just by observing them, but also, you know, being able to exchange ideas and problem solve at the same time. And so that was huge in my ability to learn and get better as a woodworker.
Almost like being raised by a village in a sense. Hey, you get
Totally.
a community to kind of, when you can put, you know, 10 people together to try and problem solve versus individually, you can almost come up with maybe three or four different ways to do something. And I think that shows in a lot of your content. I mean, I watch some of that stuff and I'm like, oh, this is crazy. Like I wouldn't have thought of that, you know, to do, you know, shim out the wall so that when you put your cabinets on, or plumb your wall, I guess, put your cabinets on, and they're all, you don't have to worry about shimming, you know, front to back. And there's so many little intricacies and different ways of doing things that I think make people a better craftsperson or craftsman, right? So.
Yeah, it makes your job. And you know, when I was up in DC training these guys, you know, and I touch upon this, you know, when I am training, it just makes your job suck less too. If you can spend 5 minutes to make your job a lot less aggravating, yeah, it's going to save you 20 minutes. Like spend the 5 to 10 minutes to make your job suck less for the other 3 or 4 hours that you're going to be doing this.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we all lose sight of that. We get subcontractor installers, especially, you know, we get caught up in production. You know, you have to get parts and pieces in to get paid. And so sometimes we'll skip steps like doing proper layout, shimming walls, which is a new technique to me within the past couple of years. I learned that from a local guy here, Charleston, Tim O'Leary, stud of an installer, younger guy. And so you lose sometimes perspective when you're out in the field. You just want to run and start putting boxes in. And then you get caught. Then you've got to run a cabinets in where you haven't checked your wall to see if it's running in or out. And now you're putting cabinets in and they're not lining up, especially the wall cabinets. And now you're reworking things. Whereas like if you had spent that 10 or 20 minutes, everything just lines up like dominoes. They just get knocked down.
They won't start racking and you get into all that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, even one of your recent videos with your layout at Rough Construction for the electricians, where to put their electrical. Like that's genius again, right? Say it might take you an hour, maybe 2 hours to go through a full job. Now you don't have to worry about, well, that electrical box is in the middle of those gables. And now, right now, what do I got to do? So just making it easier for sub trades and I ultimately yourself to make the job more smoother. So lots of different aspects that you can do that aren't necessarily time consuming that probably improve the efficiency and quality of the job done.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like I said, it makes your job suck less.
Yeah.
I mean, because it can really, once you get out on site, man, it can be a real drag. It can be difficult. It can be a grind, especially some of the size of these projects can be 4 or 5 weeks overall. Now that's time on the tools on the job, but it can actually be a 4 or 5 month span, you know, of going back in and out there after countertops, paint, all that stuff. And so, yeah, anything you do to make your life a little easier on the front end, do it, you know? So I think that's a philosophy that I want to carry on going forward, especially like if it can be done in a shop, do it in the shop, like make it easier on your guys out on the field. You know, if you can do an electrical walkthrough and make sure that that electrical outlet's not going to end up on a gable, like now cabinets are going in, you're not having to rip, you know, cut sheetrock out, cut drywall out and move an outlet that's now stapled to the wall. And there's not enough slack to move it over. And now everybody's cursing. Yeah. So yeah, it's, you know, an ounce of prevention, I guess.
Is the drywaller has to come in and then the painter and you've got to step back and it's just time consuming, right?
Time consuming, aggravating. It's like, why, you know, and then it's finger pointing.
Yeah.
It's like, how about we just avoid all of this by spending a little time on the front end, people? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, John, considering the timeline from when you were started till now, at any point during that journey, was there any one or couple individuals that really inspired you, on your journey, and whether they were like, you know, famous people or, you know, like you said, you mentioned that local builder, were there any people who inspired you on this journey in the trades and cabinet making and to kind of get into it or to keep pushing through it or to change your perspective on things? Is there anyone that comes to mind?
Yeah, one guy comes to mind that I got to work with in the shop in Charleston. His name is Bob Wablong. He's still building out here in Charleston in a high-end custom shop. Guy was just ridiculously talented. I've spoke about this before. Where he's just one of those guys. He's never moving fast, but the amount of work that he was producing and ridiculous quality as well was insane because he was just really well thought out. He was always 5 steps ahead of everybody else and 5 steps ahead of what he wanted to do. And so like he was very measured. He can get very, very passionate at times and slam things. But ultimately the guy was just, he was so talented. It was ridiculous to work next to him, to work next to a guy like that and just kind of watch him out of the side of your eye while you're trying to do what you're doing was really special. Very, very fortunate to work next to a guy like that. And I've had a few of those people, like the shop foreman in Massachusetts, highly talented guy, very demanding, but the depth of his knowledge, you know, he was a younger guy, but you know, he was one of those, he had grown up in the trades. And so like the amount of information that you can learn from guys like that, is immense. And I was just, again, fortunate, I think, to work with a lot of people like that throughout the years.
It sounds like you had to be, I think this is true for everyone entering into any sort of field, really, but you had to be pretty humble in knowing that, like, yeah, you know some stuff coming in, but all of these people around you have a ton of years of experience, and you don't have anything to prove, so I'm just going to sit here and soak it all in. Have you encountered that with, like, some newbies now that you have some experience under your belt, and people coming in thinking they know everything and not listening to... And I've shared this on the podcast before. I worked at a parts store, and there's guys in that parts store who have been there. They're in their 60s, and that was their first job. And they can sniff out, like, a know-it-all right away,
yeah,
and they won't pay you, yeah, a lick of time. And but the amount of, I don't even know, you can't even put a price on it, but the amount of years of experience that are just, if you just sit and listen, you know, can you talk, yeah, about that, your experience with that, whether coming in yourself or with apprentice type people under you?
Yeah, I think we, in the same shop in Charleston, the term ask hole came up when we'd have young guys come in, or there was one younger guy in particular who would come in. He'd ask people, hey, what's the best way to go about doing this? And that guy, Bob, or myself would tell him. And I was still sort of relatively young on the experience level, but I had much more experience than most because of where I was working up in Massachusetts. We just produced so much in a short period of time. So I knew a lot. And so this guy would go around asking people the best way to do something. And then he would do it his way. And it would, you know, and we just watch him struggle and be like, dude, we literally told you the way to do it. And you asked, not only that, you asked the best way to go about it. And then you ignored that all and did it your own way. I guess, okay, you know what? Everybody needs to learn the hard way, or it's sometimes best to learn the hard way. But I've seen guys do that repeatedly where it, okay, once or twice, fine. You know, that's part of the learning process, but guys who will repeatedly do that, you know, they're just going to, they've reached their limit as far as growth. Yeah. And you just can only spend so much time trying to teach someone or trying to tell someone, you know, okay, that person has peaked, and anything they ask you, you just have to make sure that whatever you're saying is probably not going to get through. They're just not going to want to listen to it.
That's got to be frustrating.
It is. But, you know, having worked alone now for so many years, I rarely come across that. And mm-hmm. now I think because of social media and just being on site, if somebody does ask me something, or if I am teaching somebody, you know, they are wanting to learn it. You know, they're seeking that information out because they want to get better.
How's that? So how has the social media side changed the game for you, you know, starting at a younger age before all the social media, Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff? How has that changed, I guess, the industry for you? And has it taken some time to get comfortable, you know, because I'm one to do the work, and then after, when it's done, be like, oh, I should have took some pictures of that. And then I just not in my mindset to, you know, pause. And how has that kind of transition been for you to go from no social media to putting a lot of content out?
It changed. I mean, I can say this, in all honesty, social media has really changed my life. I was incredibly introverted prior to getting on Instagram. And I actually, the one job where I was telling you that I was a field superintendent for these installers, I turned the job down initially because at first I was going to be in an office answering a phone, and I was terrified of doing that. I was so self-conscious and so just introverted that the thought of actually answering a phone saying, hi, this is John, you know, Cabinet Concepts, how can I turn the job down? I passed on it. And eventually called them back and asked for the job, and they gave it to me. And so I went from being that person, you know, very, very sort of quiet and introverted, insecure even, to starting to share things on Instagram. And it helped me get more comfortable in my skin. It really did. It really has helped me. And it can sound ridiculous to whoever's listening. I understand that. But I think there is something about just getting a little comfortable in your skin and just sharing your process and being who you are and not trying to be somebody else. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of value in that. And then just sharing the content, it just has become part of the natural process. And there's not a lot of editing involved. I think a lot of people will notice that. It's 15 seconds, video done, on to the next thing, you know, because I don't have time, you know, like, mm-hmm. and I don't want to make time at the end of the day to edit the stuff. And so it's like very rapid fire. Here you go. Here's the content, and then just move on.
I think that's awesome to be able to be your true self, like being authentic and not, you know, trying to put on a face or a different
air.
Yeah. Be able to, you know, be polished. And I mean, you see lots of these videos and people spend, or they pay thousands and thousands of dollars for editing. What about, this isn't what it actually is like in the trade. You know, you always see the final product, the final kitchen install, everything. What about the blood, sweat, and tears of getting up to that point? It's not all, you know, roses and rainbows out there for, you know, installing and stuff. So to be able to see, you know, struggles as well as tips and tricks and, hey, this is how you scribe around brick. And like, it's amazing to be able to access and have, you know, instant access to this and be able to watch different aspects of a job and over different jobs to be able to kind of, people can almost learn a lot of stuff just from those little 15 second clips.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. I think Lance talked about this when he worked in that auto body or the auto parts place, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You can sniff out someone who's not being authentic real quick. Woodworkers and guys in the trades, especially, I think you get that. Like, this guy's full of, you know what, like, you know, you can see right through it.
You
can smell it sometimes.
Yeah. you really can. And you just get that, gut feeling like, oh, this guy's completely full of it. And so I think it, if you are authentic and you can just kind of be yourself in front of your camera, your phone, and just share your information, you're gonna get a lot farther than if you're trying to be this hyper super positive person all the time on site. It's like, no, man, this job can actually suck at times, and you're gonna see the ups and downs of it. And people have seen that in spades on some of my stories, especially last year.
But it's relatable too, right? And that's where people don't want, if people can sniff it out, and if people don't like it, then they're gonna really appreciate the stuff that's authentic, because they can relate to it, and they can maybe, if they're struggling with the same thing, maybe they can find some tips or advice to deal with whatever's going on. So I think that's really cool. I think that's why you have 50,000 followers. It's because of your authentic content, right? It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's mind boggling to me, but I think it's important to show some of the frustration. Not all. I mean, God, you're not seeing half of it sometimes, but and because right. And you ultimately don't want to be known as the guy just bitching all the time about his job and, you know, how dumb everybody is when they're not. It's just mistakes happen, you know, but it's like when you're in the moment, you're just like, everybody's an idiot but me. And you got to really make sure that you're not burning bridges when you are sharing some of your frustration. You do have to edit yourself in a sense, like, okay, I'm really angry right now and I'm going to share some of that, but, you know, ultimately, like, I got to get the job done and not lose my job by saying maybe too much.
So with all the experience and knowledge that you have, it still seems like you're learning every day with some of these, you know, the fridge panels and different companies, you know, not maybe necessarily giving clear instructions on how to mount panels and different things. Do you find yourself with, I guess, the advancements and how quickly, you know, this industry, I guess, cabinet installation is changing? Does it keep you on your toes still about learning new ways to do things and like networking with other people on how to find a solution to a problem?
Yeah, that's, I think, one of the biggest things that Instagram, one of the many things, I guess I should say, that Instagram has helped is that there is a massive network now that we all have at our disposal. And, you know, if there is a question, I can reach out to somebody in California. I can reach out to a buddy, you know, in Massachusetts or New Jersey. And so, like, it's that sort of hive mind that people have talked about, and just having that network of people that I know and people that don't know me will reach out and ask me questions. So I feel like cabinet Google sometimes, and that's, and I enjoy that. It's cool. It's like, okay, that's great, because I can also then get help from others. And so you're just constantly learning and you are getting better. I mean, I feel like As a woodworker, as an installer, my skill set has gotten just so much better in the past 5 years because of the exchange of ideas and having people to that people are sharing ideas and also being able to interact with people and problem solve and just kind of shoot the shit, part of my French, through direct messages and just kind of see, you know, ways to go about and solve problems.
Totally. That's what we're doing here right now. So
Right.
Well, you've got the whole country to be able to reach out instead of just your local region or area, mm-hmm. right? Like now you're being able to branch out and like we kind of mentioned a bit before the podcast, there's, you know, it could be 10,000 ways to do something and you might know three or four, but now all of a sudden, you know, you reach out to California, Texas, wherever, you know, it could be in Europe and now you're just broadening your skill sets and, you know, giving your more, I guess, increasing your arsenal for when you get into a problem that you can be like, oh, there's that other way too that, you know, Marty from Sweden was like, oh, do this, right?
Yeah.
Marty from Sweden.
And I think,
Marty from
Sweden. He's a good dude.
Marty from Sweden's a good guy.
He's a good dude, man. Tell you about, talk all day about Marty.
Yeah. And it's really cool. It's like, I think as carpenters, we are observational learners. And sometimes we have borderline photographic memories when we see something that might apply to work down the road or something that will seem like, that's really cool. And you might not even think about it. And then a year later, you might come across that very instance. And like, wait a second, I've seen somebody do that before. Now I'm going to try that. And it helps. It really does.
Well, that visual part, I think there's a lot of, you know, whether you're in the trades or anything, that visual hands-on learning, you know, when I watch some of your videos, you've shimmed out some of your boxes away from the wall. So when you put your panel on and screw it to the wall, the panel is sucks into the wall nice.
Yeah.
I saw one of those and I was like, oh, that is wicked. And I was doing some little vanity or something and I did the same thing and I was like, oh, this is beautiful. Like just another, right?
That's incredibly.
You see something. Yeah. you see something and then it kind of sticks in your brain. And I mean, it'd be nice to be able to have like a, you know, you can save the videos, but to be able to have all these, I guess, thoughts and I need to use this when I'm doing this. Like it's, I don't know. I find it really rewarding to be able to watch something and then be able to apply that. Instead of, you know, reading literature or, I mean, there's so much to be said from watching somebody. You can learn just about as much from watching somebody as you can from doing something. Obviously, you need to practice it, but that visual part can be huge for people.
And having the humility, you know, to go, hey, that's actually a really, that's different. That's a different process. I don't know about that. And they go and also be skeptical. I mean, I used to be incredibly skeptical. I'd see something and I'm like, that's stupid. That's a dumb idea. Why would I do that? And then to go, and that, again, this is within the past 4 or 5 years where, you know, you look at an idea, you see somebody doing something like that's, I don't know, man, that's kind of ridiculous. And then you try it and then you're just confirming your own biases, right? Like your own bias. And like, yeah, that was stupid. And then you try it again. You realize there's some validity to that task or to that method. And you go, all right, maybe I'll try it again. And then you change the whole process about it because, you know, you're, I guess, humble enough to go, all right, that's actually a better way to do this.
All right.
Than my way, you know, like, all right, fine.
Do you not know who I am?
You're right. Shit, man. Yeah. I've been there. I'm still done. I still do it. I'm still guilty of it. But, you know. Yeah, because your ego kind of puffs up. That's stupid. Why would I do that? And it's like, okay, then maybe there's some validity behind that process and trying it.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about your craftsman training. So you've got all these, you know, videos with tips and tricks and just kind of part of your, of the process or progress of your jobs. And you said you're kind of leaning more towards the training. Can you talk a little bit about how that got started and what's involved with that? I've seen some videos and it seems like you're on site. Not necessarily just in a shop showing people how to do things, but actually on a project with them.
Yeah.
Hands-on training. Can you talk about your craftsman training program?
Yeah, again, that started because of Instagram. A successful remodeler out in San Diego, Marshall Booth with Spaces Renewed, is his company, and his wife. And he reached out to me. He's like, hey, I really love what you're doing on Instagram. I love all the information that you're sharing. This is back in 2018. He's like, would you mind or would you like to come out to San Diego, California, and train with my guys and work with my guys for a few days? It's like, that's a thing. Like, you know, and so I had to think about
so
it.
Cool.
And Right. I was like, you know, very uncomfortable, got nervous. And ultimately, I called up a friend and mentor, Sean Van Dyke. I think some people know him. And he helped me game plan to figure out, like, what to charge me. What do you charge for something like that? I don't know. I'm a guy working out in the field here, installing boxes, you know, installing cabinets. And ultimately came up with a structure and then flew out there and did it. And it's sort of grown organically over the years. And so it is on-site training. It's a four-day program with four guys or more, although recently just taught 24 guys a couple weeks ago. It was about six different guys a day for 4 days. It was a little different, but it's on-site for 4 days, and it's, you know, going all the way from layout to crown molding, you know, layout, scribing, crown molding. Those are kind of the three big ones, you know, that people really need to work on. Scribing and crown molding, especially, but never overlook the importance of layout. And so, you know, the training is sometimes reliant on hitting certain benchmarks, right? We need to get to certain areas in order to be able to practice certain things. Got to work on that in DC, whereas because we were switching so many people out, you know, we had to teach everybody everything in a day. And so, you know, one day is now going to be focused on these tasks, on, you know, layout, shimming of walls, scribing of end panels and fillers, crown molding, pre-assembly techniques, and some touch-up techniques as well. And then after that, it's off to the races in the field to really kind of go through the install and work side by side and coach the guys as they're going through the install.
So have you been all across America, the States with that, or
it's so far. Yeah. So San Diego now twice. Phoenix will be, I'll be going back to Phoenix now for the third time. This will be a different company this time around. I've got, let's see, there'll be another one in South Carolina in the upstate. I think North Carolina is on T, but Washington DC twice, New Jersey. So yeah, it's nationwide. Hoping to go up, get up. I have had some interest in Canada.
Nice.
That was, you're right. I know. I can't wait. But it just, I think because of COVID, I think, you know, things should start opening back up there as far as, you know, more leads up in Canada, but I'd love to get up there, but the whole visa thing's a little different too, to try to get up there. You can't. Yeah.
The working visa, you'd have to apply for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not so much, you can't really call it training, it's consulting. And so that's where it's kind of a gray area where you can do it. And I've spoken to some attorneys to kind of ease that process to get through there. But yeah, it's doable. So yeah, all over the United States, hopefully worldwide eventually.
Yeah.
I'd love to do it. But yeah, really, really fortunate that this is actually a thing.
Do you find that a rewarding, rewarding working with different crews and sharing your knowledge and, you know, working, I guess you're teaching essentially, right? You're teaching your craft and everything that you've worked towards and now sharing it with other people to make them more efficient and companies, you know, producing higher quality work. Do you find that whole process rewarding?
Incredibly rewarding. It's the best thing I've ever done. It's I have to catch myself from smiling so much when I'm on site at times, because there are moments where I have to pinch myself. Like, I'm actually doing this for a living. Like, I get to teach these guys and we're having a good time and we're laughing and we're shooting the shit and we're learning and they're learning as well. And so it's incredibly rewarding. And you don't realize how hard teaching is. And I give you guys all the credit in the world. Teaching is actually, it is very hard. It's the, you know, it's not just like somebody up there talking. You have to be engaging. You have to have a good lesson plan. You have to get guys, you know, involved by being engaged, and you're on, you know, for hours on end talking. Throat hurts at the end of the day. So it's very rewarding, and it's exhausting in a way that I never thought or I've ever experienced before in my life.
Almost like a mental exhaustion in a sense. There's the physical part, and there's also when, you know, when you're doing a lot of explaining, the mental exhaustion. When I first started, that was, I knew I was going to be tired physically, but that mental part of, you know, you get home and your brain's mush. You're like, I can't even put a sentence together here. I'm just, I don't know. You know, I've been on all day.
Yeah.
going. So
yeah, it's a different type of exhaustion. Yeah, it really is.
And, your head's on a swivel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Constantly. Yeah. And you're gauging the guys, you're gauging the people you're teaching to make sure that they are, you know, they're getting what you're saying. And so, yeah, it's, you are on high alert. You're on such a higher level, I think, than you ordinarily would be just kind of working, going back throughout your day. So yeah, but it's incredibly rewarding to see that, get that teacher's high when somebody gets something or they do something for the first time and they smile at you. And you're like, yeah,
the light bulb.
yeah, you got it.
I was just going to say, you're like a mobile post graduate shop teacher.
Yeah. And it, you know,
that's really cool.
With a ton of skills.
Credit where credit's due. Like, yeah, you know, credit where credit's due. Gary Katz kind of paved the way for a lot of guys like us, you know, and I should give him more credit. And he has been incredibly supportive. But yeah, that guy paved the way and opened up a lot of doors for training, mobile training, so to speak, and educating in the trades. And so, yeah, it's incredibly, incredibly fortunate that a guy like that was able to make that a thing. So yeah, it is. Yeah. It's like higher education on wheels, man.
So when you go to these, you know, if you're going somewhere close, do you take your work van and tools, or if you fly somewhere, are you still taking, your equipment, or are they like, do you work with the company or the installation crew? Do you work with what they have, or do you require certain tools? How does that kind of work? Yeah. 'Cause I know you have a lot of Festool and track saws, and like, there's so many different tools now that you would need to work through problems. How do you navigate that?
It's a great question. Washington, D.C. is about an 8-hour drive from Charleston, and 8.5. And that is my limit as far as driving anywhere in one day. And it's tiring. And so I will, if it's within an 8-hour drive, I'll take my truck or I'll take my van. Because it's nice to be able to show the guys everything I've got. And then they can, and we'll provide a list, a spreadsheet of all the tools that I've got with links. So when they see something, it's like, here, now you can order it. But in the meantime, you know, here's everything that I've got. You can kind of see the setup and see how I go about it. And so that's when I do drive. When I fly, same thing. And as an aside, like when I get to go work with these companies, like, I get to learn from some of the best business owners as well. Like, it's not, so I'm teaching guys installation processes, but then when I meet with the business owners, then I get an education. And one
like
of the guys,
that,
yeah, right. And so it's a two-way street. And one of the gentlemen, Jamil Audi up in Washington, D.C., he was like, yeah, let's put a spreadsheet together of all your tools. He's like, so now I've got it. And he did that. And now I've got this spreadsheet. So when I do go out to train with companies, it's like, here are my tools. And these are, here's a list of tools that I require. Some aren't required, but you need to have X, Y, and Z when I show up. And so we're not fumbling around trying to find a tool, or I'm not going to Home Depot late at night for the next day. And so that's the best way. And so when I do travel by a plane, I will bring, you know, hand tools. I'll bring my drills. I'll bring my lasers, some plastic shims and all, and just not a ton of stuff, just 50 pounds worth basically that I can get in a bag and that I can fly without having to pay extra. And so that's how that works.
That must be very beneficial for the companies to see. Even when I'm watching videos of different projects being done, I'm looking at paying attention to the tools and equipment they're using, because that has, you know, you can only do so much with XYZ, but if you get, you know, three or four more pieces, and, you know, for people starting out, or whether they're, you know, learning different ways of doing things from you, the learnings, and they don't have that equipment to be able to say, hey, this is what, or and to show your van, you know, open up the doors. And I think even that tool organization that you have too, that speaks volumes. You know, the more efficient you can, your space can be, your work van trailer, the more efficient you're going to be with the job too.
Yeah. And I do, I even said that one of the last trainings I did, is like, you can be a good woodworker, but you will be limited by your tools. All right. And so you don't need every tool, but certain tools will help you get from, you know, so high to even higher. And then not just that, but, you know, tuning them up. I didn't know miter saws needed to be tuned up till the last few years of seeing it on Instagram. going, oh, wait, that's, oh, okay. That actually does not come square from the store or from the manufacturer. And so that's another thing we focus on when I am training. It's like, okay, let's spend a little time, show you guys how to tune up your miter saw so that your cuts are going to be even that much better. And so, yeah, I think it's very beneficial, I think, to see certain tools that are going to speed up the process, track saws, especially, you know, tuning up your saws, the right blades on your saws, little things that make a huge difference in the long run.
I mean, half a degree can change out crown molding, right? Like your saws aren't bang on, and now all of a sudden now you're trying to fight. Your reveals might not be square. I mean, it can be almost a compound problem right from, and I think that's one of the most important things of having tools is knowing how to upkeep them, maintain them, and keep them true, square. And because, I mean, you drop it down a little bit hard on the base of your chop saw and it might, you know, the bevel might come out a bit. And knowing how to maintain those, I think, is crucial in when you're making money from those tools.
Yeah, for sure. You know, efficiency equals plus quality and efficiency, quality plus efficiency equal profits. So like, yeah, you improve your quality, improve your efficiency, you're going to be more profitable. And so we can tune those two things up very quickly in 4 days, get you from being a good worker to a great cabinet installer in 4 days. Especially a lot of these guys I'm training have the skill set. It's just the little things that they haven't seen. And once you show that to them, you get that light bulb moment, you said, Lance, where it's like you get four guys with that light bulb moment throughout for 4 days, seeing, you know, multiple light bulbs go off. It's like, oh yeah, these guys are going to be badass. Mm-hmm.
And they won't forget that either. That's going to be, be ingrained in them when they go to the next job, you know, every job after that. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Light bulb.
And then train.
And then they pass that down.
And then they pass that down. Exactly. And it just kind of grows like wildfire.
That's awesome.
For sure. Yeah.
So John, do you have any advice for someone who wants to start into this industry?
Yeah. I think being there, what's the term? Hungry, humble, and smart. Yeah, you have to want to learn. You have to have some humility to know that your way might not be the best way, and then have some intelligence. I mean, I think anybody getting in the trades, it's not a fallback. You know, smart people are in the trades. I mean, some of the smartest people I've met are business owners now in the trades. And take notes. Carry a damn notepad. I think that will set you apart. It's a very little thing, but if you carry a notepad around, you are that much better than the guy next to you already. Because we all know, like, when you're teaching or when you start a new job or start with a new company and you're new in the trades, especially, like, you're getting so much information thrown at you. Like, it's all, the majority of it's going to go over your head. But if you can catch two or three of those things on a notepad, you're already ahead of the guy next to you, for sure.
Well, with regards to, like, with that advice, with like specific skill sets, what's important to get into cabinet installation, woodworking, just some like specific technical skill sets?
I think you just have to look for somebody who will not say that's good enough. Mm. Yeah. I think the minute someone says, that's fine, you know, they're probably not going to cut it as a cabinet installer. You have to find somebody that is just going to beat themselves up in an inordinate amount of way. Just like, that's terrible. That miter sucks. And like the next guy next, you know, somebody walking in might not think that, but I think if you're going to be in cabinets, you have to, it's almost masochistic. Like, you're just going to have to just be angry at yourself and never be satisfied with the work. And you're never going to be, like, you're just going to get a little better. And your skill set's going to get better, but you're never going to be, I think, completely satisfied with the work. There's always something that you could have done better. And I think if you come across somebody like that, you're going to recognize it. You go, okay, this person's probably going to make it.
And that, I think that hunger and humility goes along with that too.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. I think so. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think it's a little bit of smarts, wanting to pay attention, but never really settling.
You know, I like
that. Anybody, if you ever say unironically good enough, you're not going to make it. Like, you just, like, I'm sorry.
You almost need to be in that uncomfortable stage to continue to grow each and every job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, I never walk away from a job going, yep, nailed it. there's always something, you know, like there's always something I'm going
to
walk
bow
on.
To the king. Yeah, here I am. Right.
Mic, what? Yeah. Mic drop. Yeah. Just drop the mic. I'm out.
Ric Flair with his, no. With his big jacket feather boa thing.
Nah, never. I'll walk through, you know, do some punch work and I'll just give that piece of crown a stink eye because I'm like, that just sucks. And, you know, but nobody notices it, but I notice it. You and I might notice it. Like, yeah, man, that could have been better. But again, it's such, I think it's, you know, it gets to the point where it's such a minuscule thing to you or, you know, to anybody else, but it's huge to you. And so I think just having that sort of being wired that way, for sure, it's a huge, it's a trait that will get you far in the trades.
I feel that also passes, like, I don't know, being, you know, working within very tight tolerances and walking into whether it's, you know, new homes or, you know, I'm always picking up on
the worst
different thing, you know, trim levels, or right? It just, you go into something and you're like, oh, this is, you know, wife might be like, oh, this is a great plan. I'm just like, ah, that's off that. And it almost, and then when you're in the job, when you're doing the job too, you almost beat yourself up. And I mean, sometimes you almost have to stand back and be like, you know what, this is looking good, but you're always criticizing. You're almost like your worst enemy on the job, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Or you're at a really nice restaurant and you're, you know, $100 steak and look at that miter. You know, it's like, you know, this is garbage.
It's just wood filler. Wood filler, eighth inch wide.
I can't even enjoy this $100 steak because that miter up there looks like garbage. You know, it's like, you know, it's just like, it's a curse. It really is.
Yeah.
Not $100 steak, but you know what I mean. At a fancy restaurant.
Just totally. So, with starting out, what would be top three tools? So, whether it's maybe with you doing your cabinet installation, what would be your top three starting out tools for somebody interested in getting into this trade?
I think a, you know, must have are a good level, track saw. Track saw is just going to be a money printer for you if you're working out on site. It's just, it's so versatile. It's an amazing time saver. And a good laser. And I'm late to the laser game. I mean, I worked for over a decade without a laser. And within the past five, again, I think because of Instagram, goddamn Instagram, I started to realize the value of using a laser, and it has just made my life and my processes that much better and the end result much better. So, but if you are starting out, you don't have a lot of money, you can still get by without a laser. I don't think you can get by without a track saw on site if you are installing cabinets. You know, it's one of those, it's so versatile that it's a must have, I think. And it's a big ticket item. If you think about it, it's what, $500 or $600. If you get a Makita or, you know, one of the lower end range ones, there's so many more, but that one for sure will make your life that much easier and will make you more productive and more, and make you more money for sure.
Yeah. Awesome.
So you can get by with any kind of drill.
Yeah.
I mean, and drills are a dime a dozen. You know, you start drilling down on, or quote unquote, drilling down on the specific type of drill that you want. But I mean, end of the day, a drill's a drill. Just don't use an impact or I'll just lose my shit on you on site if you're using an impact for cabinets. But like, that's a whole other podcast.
That's another episode.
Corey.
I can talk an entire hour.
I was gonna talk to you about using my impact on my last job. I actually used a drill.
So yeah, but you know, if we're splitting hairs here, I think, you know, dollar for dollar a track saw, if you are starting out, it's gonna be a great investment for you.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. I actually just got one with the school. I got a bunch of money with some extra funding and got a whole bunch of Festool routers and the track system, the track saw, the vacuums. And I'm starting to learn this because it's a game changer, and there's so much stuff you can do, and I can see the value. Even just, I just started playing around with it the other day, and I'm like, man, this is, and now you get into the cordless kit. It's like one of the cordless ones, and it's the amount of stuff you can do. And then going into, you know, live edge, ripping different pieces down and cutting cabinets up and construction side of things too. Like it's a game changer.
And incredibly safe and so much safer too. If you have to break down sheet goods, I mean, we've all seen and been that guy pushing a 4x8 sheet of plywood through a job site, you know, 10 inch table saw.
Balancing on one leg.
Right. And it's just like, oh, this is going to get real ugly real quick when I get too far down this thing. And it's like, And so now you have a track saw and now you're just safely breaking sheet goods down on a bench. I mean, it just, it's a huge safety thing as well. And it's just way more, again, if you, especially if you're teaching or if you have somebody that doesn't have as much experience, you're now teaching them a much safer process of breaking down sheet goods on site.
Yeah. Good point.
Well, John, we're hitting, this is 53 minutes already.
Wow.
It's been, this has gone by so, we got to have you on again. I say this to everybody, but we got to have you on again. We just want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule, very busy schedule, to come on the Builder Sessions and to share some of your knowledge and share your story with us. As we do the outro here, is there, like, where can people find you and is there anything you'd like to promote?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to find me is on Instagram, at JCH Cabinets. And if you have any questions about the Craftsman training, just shoot me a DM on Instagram for sure. It's probably the best way to just go about it right now to like maybe get maybe some better systems set up on a website. But right now that's probably the best thing. And yeah, I would love to talk to people about the Craftsman training program and get people going on that and train their teams.
That's awesome. Sure. And we'll put all the links in the show for that in the show notes of this episode as well. And perfect. For all Thank our you. Other episodes, check out the link on our Instagram and everything, the link in the show notes as well. And once again, John, thank you so much. This has been
guys,
great.
Yeah, Corey, Lance, I appreciate the time. I really do. Thank all you. Right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ha.
Thanks, Rosie.
And we'll see you guys in the next one.
All right.